Today's shiur is Masechet Gittin Daf Yud Aleph, and we will begin on Daf Yud Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom of Shimon Omer. The Mishnah we learned at the end of yesterday's shiur discussed shtaris that were processed by non-Jewish courts. Are they valid? So the Tanakhama said that they're valid by dinei mamnas, by financial matters, but not for gitei noshim and shechrurei avodim. And Rav Shimon says that they're even kosher, they even are valid for gitei noshim shechrurei avodim. Ask the Gemara, v'ala b'nei krisis ninhu. Goyim aren't relevant to the parasha of gitin and kedushin. So how could people who have no connection to those dinim be valid participants in such a shtar? And as the Rishonim go on to explain, there are certain dinim that we've been learning and we will continue learning about a get that we can't assume that the guy will follow the din of Lishma. The halacha is that the people who write the get have to be appointed as the shliach of the husband, and goyim la b'nei shlichas ninhu. Says the Gemara, Amar Abzeira, Yorad Rav Shimon l'shitasa shevelazim. The question is only a question because the Gemara is assuming, explained the Rishonim, that Rav Shimon follows the opinion of Rameya, who holds Edech Simakarti, and therefore, if non-Jews sign the get, how could the get be considered a valid get? But if Rav Shimon follows the opinion of Rav Elezer, Dama Edim Siri Karti, so even if non-Jews signed the get, it wouldn't disqualify it as long as Jews were the Edim Siri. And that's the case that Rav Shimon is referring to. Ask the Gemara, even if we'll say that Rav Shimon follows the opinion of Rav Elezer, as we've been discussing, that even though Rav Elezer holds Edim Siri Karti, and I saw interesting Machloikus Rishonim, how far does that mean? Does it mean that we don't even have to know anybody saying testimony about the cipher who wrote the get? Or even though Rav Elezer holds the Edim Siri Karti, we do have to have some testimony about the cipher? But certainly, according to Rav Elezer, Edim Siri Karti, and we don't have to have Edich Sima. However, Rav Elezer holds that if we're going to have a get with Edei Chsima, those Edei Chsima have to be valid Edim. And as we learned in the previous shurim, the reason being, we're concerned that very typically the same individuals who are used as the Edei Chsima were used as the Edei Mesira. And if we're going to use these individuals, if we're going to have these non-valid Edei Chsima, they may be used as the Edei Mesira. So even if we're going to hold, even if we're going to explain that if Shimon holds like Rav Elezer, that doesn't explain how he can allow Goyim to be the Edech Sima. Answers the Gemara, Hachav Ma'iskinen, B'Shemus Mufhakim. When the names that are signed on the get are obviously non-Jews, there we're not worried. Because as we said a moment ago, the entire concern is that we're going to use these individuals not only as Edech Sima, but even as Edech Mesira. But obvious non-Jews, nobody's going to make that error. Ask the Gemara, what are some examples? Examples of obvious non-Jewish names? Amra, Papa, Kigon, Hermes, Vovdina, Bar Shipsoi, or Bar Kidri, Bati, Vinokim, Una. And Tosfos points out, here the Gemara says that Shapsoi is a non-Jewish name. We know Shapsi is a Jewish name. So Tosfos says, there's a difference if it's spelled Shapsoi with an Aleph before the Yod, or just spelled Shapsi with the Sof and the Yod. Shapsi is a Jewish name. Shapsoi, with the Aleph, is a non-Jewish name. Other Rishonim say that if it's Shapsi with the Shin and the Beis right after each other, that's a Jewish name. Shifsi, when you have a Shin and a Yod in between the Shin and the Beis, that's a non-Jewish name. Avil. So according to the way we're now understanding Rav Shimon's opinion, Shemus Mahachid, if the names are not obviously non-Jewish, my, what will then the din be? Loi. The get that is signed by such individuals is disqualified. Ask the Gemara, Yehachi Adetani Sefer. Loi Hasgur Elbazman Shanasa Behedjit. We learned in the Sefer of our Mishnah that if the get was processed not by our cause, the halacha is that the get is invalid, why do we have to speak about a case? This is the way most Rishonim explained the Gemara. Why do we have to speak about such a case? Rav Shimon that says that a get that's processed by a non-Jewish court is valid. However, the Mishnah should have said, that's only when the names signed on the get are obviously non-Jewish names. Avol Shemesh Enim of Hakim, if the names are not obviously non-Jewish, loy, then the get is possible. So again, the question of Gemara is, why do we have to bring in a Shtar Hedjit into the picture? We could even spoke about our cause, just differentiate if the Shemus are Mufakim or the Shemus aren't Mufakim. Other Rishonim explain the Gemara's question this way. The Mishnah makes a blanket statement that a Shtar that's processed by Hedjoitis, a get that's processed by Hedjoitis, is possible. So the Gemara's question is why? If we're learning now that when the Shemus Mufakim, and we have no concern that we're going to use invalid Edim Asira, so then even if a shtar, even if a get was processed by a hedjet, it should still be kosher as long as the shemus are mufakim. We're not going to learn the Gemara that way. And says the Gemara, hachinami kama. This is the way to understand the Mishnah. The medvam amurim, the Mishnah indeed is saying this. When is a get that's processed by a non-Jewish court valid? That's when the shemus mufakim that the people signed on the get are obviously not Jewish. Avol b'shemus enim mufakim, if they're not obviously non-Jewish, nasik mishnasa behedjet, they have the same status as a shtar that's made not by an official court, upsulim. V'boi seima, another teretz of understanding the case of hedjoitis, the case that the Mishnah says, lo huskur el b'man shnasa behedjet, according to this teretz of the Gemara, is not referring to a get. It's referring to a shtar mamon that we have learned at the beginning of the Mishnah, and we learned yesterday that a shtar mamon is kosher when it's processed by a non-Jewish court. Why? Because we learned dina de machusa dina. And as the Rishonim point out, dina de machusa dina could only help us for a shtar mamon. Dina de machusa dina can't help us for a get, because that this is a purely Jewish religious law that Dina de Mechusa has no place in. But the Gemara is saying the last statement of the Mishnah about a shtar hedjet is going osin legitim moment, is referring to a shtar moment. Vachitani, loy huskur gitim moment psulim, even though we learned that gitim moment processed by a court are kosher, but there is a time that they're not kosher. When? Bezman shenasa behedjet. El bezman shenasa behedjet. And the reason is very obvious. Because as we learned in the previous year, when the shtar mamon is processed by an official court, so they're vested with authority by the government, and they're concerned that their reputation should not be harmed, and they make sure to do everything properly. That's when it's an official court. But when it's a hedjoit, it doesn't have all of these characteristics, then the halach is that the shtar mamon is possible. Tanya. Amar Rav Elazar Rav Yossi. Says the Gemara, we learned in a brisa, Rav Elazar Rav Yossi says, Kach Amar Rav Shimon L'Chom B'Tzidim. There's a background to this Gemara. There's a Tosefta. The Tosefta quotes a machloikis of Rav Akiva and the Chachamim, which has Rav Akiva being very lenient regarding shtaris processed by non-Jews, and the Chachamim being more stringent. And Rav Shimon comes to define that machloikis. Lo'nechelku Rav Akiva Chachamim, regarding all shtaris that are processed by non-Jewish court, even though the shtar and the edim who are signed to that shtar, the agoyim, the lochis ksherim, as we just explained, dinam, the machus dinam, but Rabbi Kiva goes even a step further. Rabbi Kiva holds that even gitei noshim and shechurei avodim that are processed by a non-Jewish court and signed by non-Jewish witnesses is still kosher. And here we have a very big machloikas Rashi and Taisus. According to Rashi, difficult as it is to understand, Rabbi Kiva is going to hold that a shtar get that was processed by a non-Jewish court, as long as it's a court and it's signed even by goyim, even if there aren't Edi Mesira, will still be kosher. Taisha says it's very difficult to understand. What makes that get a good get? And therefore Tosfos says that even Rabbi Akiva, who's being this lenient, still requires qualified Eidei Mesira. Lo nechalku ela bezman shenasa behedyot. The machlokes is when it's made not by a court. That then Rabbi Akiva is still machshir, v'chama paislim, chutz megitei nosh meshechur evadim, that there he'll agree you have to have a qualified court and Eidim. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, af elu ksherim b'mokim she'en Yisrael chayisman. In a place where the get was processed, where the get was processed by non-Jewish court, when there are where Jews are not allowed to sign, there was one of the decrees that Jews had to suffer, that they were considered second-class citizen and they weren't qualified to be Edom. So as Rav Shimon Gamliel, and it's very easy to understand Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion, Rav Shimon Gamliel, and the Rishonim explained Rav Shimon Gamliel this way, obviously holds that Edom is Sirikarti, and since Edom is Sirikarti, as long as the people who are signing the shtar are obviously non-Jews, why are they obviously non-Jews? Because it's a place where Jews aren't allowed to sign. So therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we don't have to worry that people are going to confuse and allow the Eidich Sima to be the Eidim Mesira, and the get is kosher. Avil, the Mokim Shi Yisrael Chaisman, in a place where Jews were allowed to sign shtaris, loy. There's always a concern that we don't know who indeed are the witnesses who signed on the shtar, and we may not recognize that the signatories to the get are non-Jews, and we may come to make the error of using them as Eidei Mesira, and therefore Rav Shimon Gamliel says, in such a place, we can't allow the shtar to go. Ask the Gemara, Mokim Shein Yisrael Chaismim, even in a place where Jews were not allowed to sign shtaris, still, ask the Gemara, should still be halacha, that the get that was processed in such a place by a non-Jewish court should be pasul, because nigzer ata makam shi Yisrael chaismim. Why shouldn't we say that we may confuse, and even in a place where Jews are allowed to sign, we're going to get confused and allow such a shtar to stand? Answers the Gemara, shma b'shma michlef. If we allow people who are not Jewish to sign, unless it's Shemus Mefakim, as we learned on top of the Amid, unless they're obviously non-Jews, since we don't recognize that the name is Jewish or not Jewish, we can make a mistake and think that we may use these people as Eidei Mesira, since it's not obvious that they're non-Jewish. However, Mokum Asra Ba'asra Loy Michlef. If in one area Jews aren't allowed to sign, so when we see a shtar signed, we know that the people who signed the shtar must have been goyim. It couldn't be a Jew. Jews not allowed to sign. We're not going to make exeret that in the other place where Jews aren't mistreated and they are allowed to sign, that they're going to get confused. Says the Gemara, Ravina savalach shur b'chnufoy seder amoy. Ravina wanted to say that a get that was made not by a court, this is the way the Rishonim explained the Gemara, just by a gathering of the Ramoy is kosher. And the way the Rishonim explained what was Ravina's thinking, Ravina's thinking was that as long as the get is not processed by Hedyotis, it's a kosher get. We don't need to have an official court. To which Raphim told him, Akos Tanan. No, anything less than an official court cannot process a get. Why? Because you have to have the official court where we're not concerned about anything dishonest happening, processing the get. Says the Gemara, Tanan, Amarova, Hai Shtar Parso, if there was a shtar that was written in Persian, the Nasra Nile Bapli Sadi Yisrael, that the Eidim Mesira were Jews, Magbinim Bebe Nei Chayri. The halach is as follows. What is, in a shtar moment, what is one of the advantages of having something committed to writing, the shtar? So we know that the halach is that the shtar causes that the lekuchas, the shtar creates a lien. It creates a mortgage. Meaning, if today I take a loan from you, all of my property is mortgaged to that loan. If tomorrow I sell that property, and then when you come to collect the loan from me, I unfortunately don't have any assets to pay off the loan, you have a right to go to the people who purchased the property after, purchased my property after the loan took place. And this is what we know is called a title search. A title search investigates, are there any liens on my property? Here the Gemara is saying that even though normally by committing a chayv, by committing a loan to a document, it creates this lien that you, my creditor, have the right to take money from my lekuchais if I don't have the ability to pay, a shtar that was written in Persian doesn't give you that right. Says the Gemara, but obviously the shtar for itself is a valid shtar. The only issue is that it doesn't have this power to give you the power to collect from the lekuchas. Ask the Gemara, the shtar should be considered totally invalid. Because v'lo yod l'mikri, people can't read the shtar. We don't know Persian. So the Edom don't know Persian. How could they be signers to a shtar that they don't know the language? Says the Gemara b'diyadi. It's referring to a case that the people who signed do know Persian. So the Rishonim ask, we're going to learn a series of questions about a shtar that was prepared by non-Jews that should say that the shtar is possible. So the Rishonim ask, why is the Gemara only asking these questions on this Gemara? Why don't we ask it on the Mishnah? We've been learning in the previous Mishnayos that a shtar, at least a shtar moment certainly, that was prepared by a non-Jewish court is valid. So why didn't the Gemara ask all the problems that we're going to discover today, which stories that could be done by Goyim? Why do we have to ask it on this Gemara? We could have asked it on the Mishnah. So Rishonim explained, in the Mishnah we're referring to a situation that although the shtar was processed in a non-Jewish court, it was a Jew that did the entire shtar. It was a Jewish shtar, just he decided to go to to a secular court. Here, it's not just that it was a secular court. It was completely done by Goyim. And that's why we have all these concerns. That's one kasha. The Kivega asks another kasha. Here the Gemara is saying that the shtar indeed was written in Persian, and it was signed that way, but we had good Edim Mesira. So Edim Mesira don't have to read the shtar. Edim Mesira just have to be able to recognize the shtar. The halacha says, Rekiv Ege, is that if I am an Edim Mesira to you giving a shtar to someone else, as long as when the shtar will come up for verification, I could say, yes, I know this is the shtar that I saw transferred from Reuven to Shimon, the fact that I don't know what it said in the shtar doesn't disqualify me as an Edim Mesira. So why is the Gemara saying that the Edim Mesira can't read it? They don't have to be able to read it. Tvius ayin, that this is the shtar, is enough. And Rekiv Ege remains with Akasha. Rekiv Ege remains with Akasha. I saw that the Rishash says that Tvius ayin isn't enough that I could just say that I know that this is that shtar. Tvius ayin requires a higher level of familiarity. It may not require that I should know every word that it says in the shtar, but it should be able to recognize the words. And here the Gemara is asking that the Edom Asira don't know Persian. And says the Gemara, but the Yadi, that they do know to read Persian. Ask the Gemara, one of the halachas that a shtar, to be considered a valid shtar, is that it has to be written on a type of paper that if it's going to be erased, it's going to be noticeable that it was erased. We are careful to use such documents that if there was any erasure, because there's obviously concern that somebody's going to manipulate the shtar and erase and put some other words. I borrow from you $100 and they put in $1,000. But the goyim don't have that requirement. Says the Gemara, but afitzim. Afitzim means that they used some sort of a chemical, gallnuts, that they treated their paper with that made it noticeable if it was tampered with. Tosfos says it doesn't have to be dafka afitzim. Sid, putting like a coating of lime on the parchment would also create the same situation. Ask the Gemara, v'be'inen tzorch shiachs minyona shel shtar b'shita achroina v'leka. One of the halachas that there is regarding a Jewish shtar, very interesting halacha, is that the last line of the shtar is not supposed to contain any new information. All the last line of the shtar is supposed to do is review and summarize what the shtar said previously. Why do we have such a halakha? Because typically, if I'm given a shtar to sign, people aren't so careful that they should sign right under the last line. They leave a little space. So there's always a concern that somebody took that last line and wrote in some new part to the shtar, which would be very favorable. So therefore, the halacha is that the last line doesn't count. It just is a review of the previous lines in the shtar. So the Persians aren't makbir on that din. Says the Gemara, ben mahadir. It's referring to a shtar that they did do this, that they did use the last line just to summarize what it says in the previous lines. There's a machlokes rishonim. What will be the din if you have a shtar that the last line is not a review of the entire of what it says in the shtar? It has new information. How do we treat that shtar? Some rishonim say that that shtar is totally invalid. Other rishonim say it doesn't invalidate the shtar. Just the last line, because of the concern that I just mentioned, will not be considered something that we could follow. But it doesn't invalidate the previous lines. It says the Gemara, if this shtar is so perfect, obviously the Persians came to the Daf Yomi Shir, and they knew everything that they have to do about writing the shtar, so why we go back to the original halacha? The Gemara is saying that even though the shtar is valid, we could only use it to collect from Bnei Chayrim. If it's such a good shtar, so we should use it to collect even from Meshubadim. Answer the Gemara, Lesley Kala. Why is the halacha that a shtar has to, only when a loan is put into writing, into a document, is the halacha that then you could collect from Lekuchas? Because once something is put into the writing, it has a call. People are aware of it. Something that's alpeh, something that's verbal, doesn't have that call. So here we have a good shtar, and it's written. Answers the Gemara, since this shtar won't have a kol. And here too we have a machlokes rishonim how to understand the Gemara. Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel understand the Gemara this way. In order for a shtar to have the proper kol, which will give it the ability to collect from lekuchis, we have to have valid edei chesima. This shtar, as we explained at the beginning of this piece of Gemara, doesn't have valid edei chesima, and therefore it's not qualified to collect from Meshubadim. Tosfos says that normally you only need Edim Asira to validate a shtar to collect from Meshubadim. So if so, we have a Gvaldiga Kasha on Tosfos. Here we have good Edim Asira. So why can't we collect from Meshubadim? So Mefarshim explained that according to Tosfos, you don't have to have Edim Chesima. Edim Asira are enough. But the shtar at least has to be written in a language that Jews are familiar with. Here we're referring to a shtar that was written in Persian, which wasn't a language that Jews were familiar with. Here, even Tosfos will agree that this shtar doesn't create the requisite kol, and therefore it can't be used to collect from the Shabbat. Says the Gemara, Barminei Rish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish asked the following question from Rabbi Yochanan. Eidem achasum mal get. You have Eidem sign in a get, v'shmaisen kishmais of the Kachavim, and they're obviously non-Jews. But it's non-Jewish names, but it's not obvious that the signatories are Jews or not. Mahu. So, what is the halacha? Can we say that if we'll have kosher Edim Masira, it's enough? Or since we don't know who these people who signed it, we don't know how to treat the shtar. Amala, Leibali Yadenu, we never had a situation, Ela Lucas Velus. Only when the names are obviously non-Jewish names, like the Rishonim explained, Lucas Aluz were names of Avodah Zorah, no Jew would ever use those names. That's the only case, V'chsharnu. Why? Because Dafka Lucas Aluz, no Jew would ever use that name. So we go back to what we discussed at the beginning of the Shir. So now we have a situation of shameless Mufhakim, and when the signatories to the Shtar are obviously non-Jewish, there the halacha is that it's kosher. Avos Shmos Achrina, if there are other non-Jewish names, the Shchichi, the Yisrael, the Mask B'Shmasayu, the Jews also maybe have those names. It's not obvious that these people are signing are non-Jewish, there the halacha is that the shtar is loy, it's not kosher. Ask the Gemara, Eisvei, it says in a brisa, Gitam b'amadin sayam, if you have a get that comes from overseas, the Eidim chasum maleim, and you have Eidim signed on the shtar, on this get, even though they, the names, we don't know, are Jewish or not Jewish, ksherim, we could say that the get is kosher. Why? The fact that the shtar has a name on it, which is not a Jewish name, is in no way an indication that the person that signed is non-Jewish. Because it was very common that Jews in Chutz Laretz had non-Jewish names. And so the Gemara, there it's not because, there it's different. Hasam k'rektoni tama. There it's different. When a shtar comes from Chutz Laretz, and yes, the name on it is a non-Jewish name, that in no way indicates that we use non-Jewish Edom. Because people in Chutz Laretz had non-Jewish names. But the case, so now we have a question. How did Reb Yochanan tell Reish Lakish that such a shtar is possible? The answer is because Reb Yochanan was talking about a shtar in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, it was very common, it was very uncommon that a Jew would have a non-Jewish name. And therefore we see a shtar with a non-Jewish name, we go back to the old rule of Mezuyif Metoicha, that unless the name is obviously non-Jewish, Lukas Veloz, the shtar is possible. Vikadamri, and others say that the way to understand the Gemara is as follows. Reish Lakish asked a question from Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan didn't know the answer until Kemas Nisan Bamine. Indeed, the question Reish Lakish asked for Rabbi Yochanan is what this brisa we just learned discusses, and he brought this brisa to answer that the shtar would be good. So we go back to discuss the first teretz, that the first teretz draws a distinction between the shtar that came from Chutz Laretz versus the shtar in Eretz Yisrael. Because in Chutz Laretz, it was very common that Jews would have non-Jewish names. Ask the Mefarshim, if the shtar comes from Chutz Laretz, we have a much simpler way of realizing that the shtar is a good shtar. We're learning Masechta Gittin. The most fundamental halacha we've been learning in this Masechta is that when the shliach brings the shtar, he says, b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechtam. So isn't b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechtam the best proof that it was indeed Jews who signed the shtar? So one teretz I saw, as nice chazar on what we've been learning, b'fanei nechtam does not always have to be said when a shtar is brought from Chutz Laretz. As we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, if two Edom brought the shtar, then we don't have to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. And that's the case of the Braisa. There was two people that brought the shtar, and since two people brought it, we don't have to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. Another teretz is that b'fanei nechtam speaks to a lot of halachas. But it doesn't speak that the shliach could testify that the people signing the shtar were Jewish. B'fanei nechtam maybe tells us it was Lishma. It could tell us that the cipher was indeed the one that wrote it. But b'fanei nechtam doesn't require that the shliach who's bringing the shtar should be able to testify that I know that the people who signed it were Jewish. And therefore we can't rely on the b'fanei nechtam. So here we see that clearly in Chutz Laretz, Jews had non-Jewish names, which is a very interesting issue, because the Paiskim seem all to agree that a Jew is not allowed to have a non-Jewish name. The only shaila is, how much of an Isser is it? Some Paiskim, the Marashdam, holds it's an Isser Darabonim. The Maramshik holds that it's an Isser Daraisa. What's the Pasuk? Fa'avdom Eschem Li Lo'am. And says the Maramshik included in that name, in that din of Avdol Eschem Li La'am is an obligation that we be different. And one of the ways we be different is that we don't have the same types of names as non-Jews. So how could they have had non-Jewish names? And in fact, Roy Dvarim Lamish Amram, somebody told me that where did the Maramshik get the name Shik? You know, we know that having family names is a relatively recent event in history. The Maramshik chose the name Shik because Shik stands for Shame Yisrael Kodesh. And he wanted to show that I'm going to have a name, but I want to have a Jewish name. Shame Yisrael Kodesh. So the question is, how does our Gemara say that Jews in Chutzlort had non-Jewish names? So I saw that the Paiskim grapple with this question. And they say a very interesting shot. They say originally when people gave names, it's not like common custom nowadays that most names that are given for family, after family members. They used to give names after events, after current events, after historical events that they lived through. In Chutz Laretz, the historical events, the current events, were non-Jewish names because in Chutz Laretz they spoke not Lashon HaKodesh. That's how non-Jewish names came into the vocabulary of Chutz Laretz. In Eretz Yisrael, they also gave names that way. But in Eretz Yisrael, they spoke Lashon HaKodesh, so therefore when they gave a name after something that happened, after a historical event, they gave a Hebrew name because they spoke Lashon HaKodesh. And therefore, they go even a step further. Even when the custom changed, and they started giving names, not after events, but rather after people, those people that they were naming after were people who had names that were originally non-Jewish names because of the events that they were named after. So that became part of their culture that they had non-Jewish names. But not because they were naming a non-Jewish name. It was a name after an event which was not considered using a non-Jewish name. Says the Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, there's a very fundamental halacha that we all know, which is called Zochem La'adam Shlo B'fanav. To do something positive on your behalf, I could do without your consent. Zochel Adam Shlo B'fanav, I could do something on your behalf positive. But that's only if it's a schus, if it's a chayv, if it's something detrimental to you. I can't do it without me being appointed as a shliach or me doing it on your behalf as a shliach. So says the Mishnah, Hayim Ten Getz Elishti. A man tells a shliach, take this get to my wife. So getting divorced, obviously, is nothing so great. So when the person takes the get on behalf of the husband, he's not able to be zoicher in that get on behalf of the wife. Because the get is a davar chayv. Now the question is, what about a shtar shichur? Somebody says, take the shtar shichur zila avdi. Owner tells somebody, take the shtar shichur on behalf of my Evid. So since neither of these is considered a schus, the halacha is imrotz lachs of the shneim, if the owner regrets and retracts prior to the shtar arriving to the woman, the get arriving to the woman, or the shtar shechur arriving to the man, to the evid, he has the right to retract because it doesn't become valid until it's actually delivered because it's not a schus. Divrei Remeya. So Remeya, we're going to discuss Remeya's opinion more in tomorrow's shir, obviously holds that a shtar shichur is not considered a schus for an eved. So I saw the Mefarshim ask, whatever reason Remeya has, it's not considered a schus. We know that the Torah says that if an owner of an eved kanani permanently damages one of the eved's evorim, that's what's known as shen v'ayin, his tooth or his eye, the Eved goes out free. So the question is, we're obviously doing something on the behalf of the Eved. But Remeya holds going free is not a schus. So why is that what he gets? Because he got damaged. So I saw two terutzim. One terutz is, usually Remeya holds that an Eved going out is not a schus. But here it is a schus. If you have an owner that's damaging you, that he's permanently damaging you, then it's a schus to get away from him. Another teretz that I saw is as follows. From the perspective of the Eved, as the Gemara teaches us, going out is not something that he wants. That doesn't mean it's the right perspective. From the Torah perspective, there, it certainly is worthwhile to be free. So, of course it's better to be free. But that's only from our perspective. The Eved doesn't necessarily have that perspective, and therefore somebody who takes the shtar shichur after the Eved cannot be considered as doing something that's a schus for the Eved. But then I saw another question. We know that one of the rules throughout Torah is ein shliach ledvar aveira. Ein shliach ledvar aveira. You can't appoint somebody to be a shliach that's going to do an aveira. We know that the Torah says, oilam behem tavoidu. Avodim are not supposed to be ever released. So how could I appoint a shliach to take a shtar shichur to my eved? It's an aveira. You're not supposed to release your eved. So I saw a number of turutzim to this question. One teretz is that it's only an aveira for the owner, but it's not an aveira for the eved. Here we're talking about the shliach is doing something on behalf of the eved. An eved can appoint the shliach. Then it's not considered an aveira. Another teretz is that even though there's a halacha of ein shliach l'dvar aveira, that's only if I didn't officially appoint him as a shliach. But in a case where I officially appointed him as a shliach, just because it's an aveira, it doesn't nullify the shlichus. And the third teretz that I saw to this question, under certain circumstances, which very well may be the case in our Gemara, there is no isser to release an eved. And therefore, it's not considered an aveira, and there's no concern of ein shliach l'dvar aveira. However, the Chachamim disagree with Rameya. Chum amrim, b'nirtei noshim. Certainly getting divorced is something that's not good, and therefore we don't apply the concept of zochel adam shel b'fanav. Avaloi b'shechurei avadim. When it comes to shechurei avadim, certainly it's wonderful that this eved should go free, and therefore as soon as the shliach picks up the shtar, the eved goes free. However, the Rif says a very interesting halacha. The Rif says that even though the Chacham hold that it's a schus for the eved to go free, and therefore as soon as the shliach picks up the get, we employ the concept of zochel adam shelo b'fanav, says the Rif, that doesn't mean that the eved is totally free. He's sort of in a twilight zone. He's not free until the get is actually delivered to him. He's no longer an eved, but he's not considered totally free until the shtar shichur is actually delivered to him. Why did Chum say by an eved as soon as the shliach obtains the shtar shichur, he's free? So a shtar shichur is a schus. A get is a chayv. Shem yirtzo, why is it a chayv? Because what does an eved gain by being an eved? That he has guaranteed food. Says the Mishnah, he's not guaranteed to get food and board. Shem yirtzo shloi lozenes avdoi. If the owner chooses, and we'll discuss this much more in tomorrow's shir, not to support his eved, rishoy. So therefore, the eved really has nothing to gain by being an eved. What are you saying? That his maila is that he's getting supported? The owner could choose not to support him. However, by a wife, a husband doesn't have that choice. V'shloi lozenes ishtoi ein rishayim. Amalahem, very poisles avdamin atruma. Say the chachamim to Reb, says Rameh to the chachamim, you're right. We're not harming the eved because he wasn't getting supported anyway. But the halach is that an eved kanani of a kohen is a lot of truma. And now that we're going to free him, he's not going to be able to eat truma. And we know that truma was very plentiful and it was very cheap because only kohanim and their avadim and their families allowed to eat truma. So it is detrimental to him that he should be freed. So that's why even you, says Ramey to the Chacham, should agree that an eved being freed is considered a chayv. Amlam neshu kinyanai. And as we're going to learn the Gemara in tomorrow's shir, what the Mishnah means to say is, getting truma is not a guarantee, because the owner has always the option of selling the eved. And since he always has the option of selling the eved can't say that I'm guaranteed to get truma, that now I could have had truma, and now I'm losing it. Because he could have lost it anyway by the Adon selling him. So our Mishnah, when it presents the opinion of Chachamim, seems to be making the following dichotomy. By Isha, it's always a chayv, and by an Eved, it's always a schus. However, and therefore, you can't be zoicha in a get on behalf of an Isha. However, the Shulchan Aruch does point out, the Torah points out, that there are cases where it will be a schus. It talks about two cases that are similar. Let's say the husband, Rachman Shalom, becomes a meshumet. And there's a real concern that the husband may not give the get. So as soon as the husband writes the get, and the wife may be far away, we want to be zoich in the get before he changes his mind. Or, what's going to be the halacha that this husband is very ill, and he has one brother, and they have no children, and he has a brother who's a meshumed. where there's a real concern that this brother, the Meshumer, will never want to do Yibum Chalitza. He doesn't believe in the Torah anymore. There to get is certainly a schus, otherwise the woman will never be able to get remarried. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that this rule is not a hard and fast rule. And we have to look at sometimes at the circumstances, and sometimes a get by an Isha could be a schus. And perhaps sometimes the Chacham will agree that a Shtar Shikha by an Eved will be a Chayv. The Mishnah speaking in most situations. However, I did see other Rishonim that disagree, and they hold the following. We follow most cases. In most cases, a get is a Chayv. In most cases, a Shtar Shikha is a Schus. You could always find exceptions to the rule, but we're not going to be driven by the exceptions. Yosef of Hunav Rav Yitzchak by Yosef Kamedra of Yimiyah. Yosef of Yimiyah of Kamen Amning. They were sitting there, and Yimiyah was dozing. Yosef Hunav Kamen, and Rav Hunav sat and said, Shma Mino Midrabonim, Hatoifus Labal Choyf Kono. The halacha is that if somebody owes me money, and I go and I take money on his behalf, I'm doing him a schus. Like that, he gets his money. Therefore, it's kana. Amalei Rav Yitzchak by Yosef. So Rav Yitzchak by Yosef asked him, is this the halacha afil b'makom shechav v'acherim? Let's understand a simple case. Simple case is like this. Reuven owes money to Shimon and Levi. I'm Shimon's friend, and I'm able to take money from Reuven on Shimon's behalf. Is the halacha that I'm allowed to do that or not? Posh b'shat, we would say vada. Zoch l'adam shalai b'fanof. But here, when I'm doing this, I'm doing it to the detriment of Levi. Because now by Shimon getting the money, there may not be any money left for Levi. When we say that I can be zoich la'odam shloi b'fanof, is it only when there's nobody else to lose something, or even when somebody has something to lose? Amlu, dardaki, children, it's amlu, afil makum shalachacha. Amalei in. Yes, you could be zoich for somebody else even when it's to someone else's detriment. Why? Because we see in our Mishnah. Let's understand the simple case of our Mishnah. This Eved is your Eved. And the halacha is that as soon as I take the shtar from you, according to the Chachamim, I'm zoich in the shtar on behalf of the Eved. That's really to your detriment, because now you're losing the Eved. So how can we, if we're going to say that we don't say the concept of Zochel L'Adam Shalom B'Fanav V'Mokum Shechav L'Acherim, how can we say that I can be Zochel the Eved in this case? That's one way of learning the Gemara. It's the simplest way. However, many Mepharshim are bothered with this approach. First of all, this is not a case of Choyv. You don't owe the Eved anything. The owner doesn't owe the Eved anything. And furthermore, it's you chose to free him. It's not called Chav L'Acherim. Nobody forced you to free him. So therefore they say the case of the Gemara is as follows. Let's say you own an Eved, and you put up the Eved as collateral for a loan that you took. And now by me being Zoich in the Eved, me getting the Shtar Shichur, and be Zoich on the Eved, it's to the detriment of the person who has the Eved as collateral. Still the Mishnah didn't make any differentiation, that I always, the Shlich could always be Zoich. Aye, it's v'makum shechav l'acherim. Ad ha'chi isbar of Yimiyah, omelei dardiki. Hachi Omer Rav Yochanan, this is what Rav Yochanan says, Hatoifus b'alchoy b'mokum shalchav l'acherim, loy kona. You can't have zochel l'adam shalchav when it's to someone else's detriment. There's a time of Mishnah saying it, but you'll ask, didn't we just explain our Mishnah, which is a situation of chav l'acherim, and yet we're saying that we do say zochel l'adam shalchav b'fanav? So the Mishnah, from our Mishnah we can't bring a raya. Kol ayim atanukayim zochel domi. In a case where you're just being zoichin something, on my behalf, if it's to someone else's detriment, it won't work. In our Mishnah, it's not just that I have a shtar that you took on behalf of the Eved. I gave you the shtar. I explicitly told you that the shtar should be a full-fledged emancipation of the Eved. Therefore, our Mishnah cannot be used as a raya to the din of Makom Shechav L'Cherim. I saw that the Paiske mentioned this din of a Makom Shechav L'Cherim comes up many times. We have a situation where let's say me and some friends of mine, my relatives, are standing in line to get on a bus, to get on a train. And I'm standing at the head of the line, and my friend and my relative are standing at the back of the line. So I get onto the bus, and I save a seat. Remember, we always saved seats. Are you allowed to save a seat for someone? The answer is, normally you could save a seat for someone else. But here it's for makom shechav lacherim. By me saving the seat, the other person that won't have a seat. And our Gemara just taught us that we don't say zachen la'adam shalai b'fanav, but makom shechav lacherim.